So there's this movie that a lot of people recommended online. It's from the 70s called Rolling Thunder. Basically, it's about a Vietnam vet or Vietnam POW comes home and his family is murdered over some silver dollars. And basically, he has to go find the people who murdered his family. And other than that, there's not much of a story. It's just a basic revenge story. It's a little bit like a Western, but I don't know. It doesn't have a lot of dialogue in it. Not expecting like high caliber dialogue for a movie like that, but there's definitely room to fit some decent dialogue in between the characters, and they just didn't. It's one of these movies that everyone recommends over and over and over again, and then I watch it and I'm completely disappointed. That happens a lot, and I don't know, I didn't care for it. The ending was slightly satisfying, but I mean, I expected that to happen in the end. There wasn't any twists or surprises or any kind of real suspense. I don't know. I think the movie was really lacking, and I don't know. I think movie's quite overrated on the internet, and I've seen way better movies.
Thunder rolls, bam, bam, bam. I don't know. I don't remember the
Singing
words to that.
Chris Gaines song
another
right
love
now.
Goes
Is that what's going on
cold
here?
in a storm is now.
Spin-off Chris Gaines podcast.
Yeah, we've talked about it long enough. Let's do it.
I'm in 100%.
Remember when Chris Gaines was on Saturday Night Live?
Yeah, vaguely. I think
Yeah.
that's maybe like the one reason I know what Chris Gaines is
Yeah.
because of that appearance on Saturday Night Live.
That was a real wrestler move Garth Brooks did.
Yeah, he's just like an emo guy from what I remember. He
It was
was like
like,
just like a
it's just,
sensitive rocker
man, he
character
was like
type thing.
edgy. He was supposed to be like edgy or something, but it was essentially just the same shitty music.
Yeah, I
It
don't
was
remember.
just an edgier character.
Proved to be a huge success because people are still talking about Garth Brooks to this day.
I want to say he like wrote a song about like Columbine.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Remember how famous Garth Brooks was in the 90s? What
Yeah.
was going on back then?
He's back.
Is he?
Yeah.
I was going to say,
Or
he's
it was a
like
couple
the
years ago.
avatar of musicians, and that like he was absurdly successful, like
Yeah.
biggest thing ever in the
Right.
world, and like. But somehow made absolutely zero impact on the culture. Like nobody
Yeah.
talks about him. Like he's got no place in like I don't know, whatever my point is.
He
Garth Brooks fucking sucks.
came back a couple of years ago, I want to say, and I think he had like an exclusive deal to sell his music at Walmart.
Oh, that's the trashiest thing I've ever heard in my life. That's the perfect thing. If I was a big country star, I'd be trying to sign that sweetheart deal definitely.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. They're still gonna buy his stupid albums, so he's getting that money.
Where do
Then he's
all
getting
the
money from Walmart.
toothless jackbillies that listen to my music shop, I wonder? I got an
Shit dang.
idea.
Shit dang. Walmart.
And also, he had been working the last few years as a greeter there, so it was just some corporate synergy, really.
Yeah.
Like already all the connections were in place.
Keep it in the family. I love it. We're gonna
You've
talk.
been looking at Pornhub front page recently, too, it sounds like.
Well, hell yeah, dog. Don't give me those fake incest movies. Give me the real
Oh, yeah.
ones.
Get your step out of my porn titles. I'm sick of
Yeah.
all this step bullshit.
Right. Give me the real deal. I want to see shame in people's eyes. You know, eyes, also kind of far apart.
So do I. That's why I live in Northwest Indiana.
Hell yeah. There's
nothing I like better than just seeing shame in people's eyes. You get a lot of it around here.
Yeah, everybody walking around with shame.
Especially at the Walmarts.
There's no shame in our game, because we got pretty good and toasty last night, huh?
Yeah, I've been kind of dragging ass all day today. A little bit of the struggle bus going on.
I'm on like a 7-day bender here.
I had to get up like 2 hours earlier than normal, and just I've been acting like it's a gigantic deal all fucking day. Oh, just Jesus. Like, how am I going to get over this?
Oh, God. You had that court-ordered class again today, right?
I did, yeah.
Oof, man. That judge really screwed you on that one.
Mm-hmm. Oof. Got out of there and went to Culver's and pounded a pot roast sandwich, though, and started feeling a lot better.
Oh, I had the pot roasted station for dinner.
Oh, this is crazy. We're full of coincidence.
Full of wild turkey and pot roast.
What a life we're living over here.
That's how we do things here on Baby Oil and Blow.
I was wondering if it was still a podcast.
Action movie extravaganza.
I wondered if we were going to introduce it.
Starring Matt. Oh,
this is new.
Featuring Nate Slick Dick Adams.
Who gets the and credit?
And that bust you have wearing an Ultimate Warrior mask.
Oh,
he's somebody famous.
Showing up in the movie, yeah. Right? I assume so. Some old Greek guy or something. I don't know. Ahoy, everybody.
That's my great, great, great Papu. Hello there.
Yeah. Just another dirty Greek butt toucher, as far as I
aren't
know.
We all. What do we got on the docket this week,
on
buddy?
On the docket this week, we're talking more action movies because we got a fucking action movie podcast going here on this Baby Oil and Blow. Another week, fucking, you know, bullet-riddled adventure.
Another shoot 'em up.
Let's get into this rundown. Rundown this week is brought to us by Night Flight Plus, the newest streaming service I've been dabbling in. I got their free week trial going on right now. Just a bunch of old weirdo video shit from the like 80s and stuff.
Yeah.
And best of all, old episodes of Night Flight, complete with weirdo old 80s commercials. You get music videos you forgot existed, strange exploitation movies that you never knew existed. I'm having a lot of fun with it.
You've fallen down a really weird streaming wormhole.
A lot of fun with it. Yeah. I decided like a while ago, just like, I guess it's not true what I'm about to say, because I am still watching Game of Thrones. But with that one exception for 3 more episodes, anytime anybody's like, oh, there's this new show everybody's watching, you got to watch it. I've decided I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
I'm not watching any of that bullshit because there's just too much of it.
Right.
I'm sick of having these talks with people about these episodes of things that I need to watch. So I'm just going to watch the weirdest stuff possible.
Grimy,
disgusting, drive-in fucking movies. Weird shit from the 70s and the 80s, gritty VHS nonsense, and I'm going to make myself a weirder and weirder person that's harder and harder for other people to relate to, because that's where I am anyways, so why not just lean into it?
It's going
to
backfire, though, when you run into some like real fucking weirdos that also watch that shit.
Oh, man, and then they want to talk about that.
Yeah, and they think like you could be their first friend.
There's nothing I hate more than people who share my interests.
Yeah.
People are always trying to introduce me to other people who share my interests. And I'm like, no, those people are always terrible. They've always are ugly and smell bad.
I believe it was Steve Malcolmus who said it. Oh. Because I'm empty and you're empty too.
Yeah.
Was that the line?
That's in one of his
songs
for sure.
That's what you need. Just be empty.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind having some
full
people,
of nothing.
Empty people around. We could sit around and be empty together.
Black eyes.
He's my best friend. Sometimes we still never talk.
Yeah, that's good.
You feel me? So the rundown is of 1977's revenge classic, Rolling Thunder. Let's get into the particulars here.
Okay.
Our director, John Flynn.
Yeah.
This is the man who made Out for Justice, Matt.
Right.
He's kind of a legend in some circles.
He's the man that made the film that got edited by Warner Brothers the same year as the Warner Brothers edited the film we watched last week.
2 weeks in a row, we're talking about Out for Justice. That can't be a coincidence. This is the universe telling us something,
pointing somewhere, man.
Also, he made Brain Scan, probably the third best Eddie Furlong movie out there, as far as I'm concerned.
There's a witness.
Two, if you count me. But I'll never turn you in. They could pump 1,000,000 volts through me. They could bust my fingers one by one by one. by one, they could dig out my eyes. But no country western music, please. Every man has his limits.
What's number one? Crow 3?
Crow 3 is probably number 2.
Oh, okay.
All right. I mean, I gotta go T2 is number 1. It's pretty fucking
cool.
Oh,
you meant Detroit Rock City.
Pretty fucking cool movie.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever saw that one. There's some Ed Furlong picks watchable out there that I need to catch up on. I haven't celebrated his entire catalog at this point.
That was like the last real movie they let him be in.
Then he got really into drugs.
Yeah.
Well, I've seen some pictures of him. It ain't pretty.
By Detroit Rock City, he already started looking like somebody's lesbian aunt.
That's never good for anyone.
Just went further into that.
Writers of the film, first draft that they were starting to shop around and try to make this movie, famously written by Paul Schrader. They didn't shoot his script, but he's still the guy they used in all the advertisements. Writer of Taxi Driver, writer director of First Reformed, which was my favorite movie of last year. So this guy's out there kicking dick still.
He wrote that one?
Wrote it and directed it. And great little...
Ethan Hawke joint.
Yeah, yeah, I think probably my favorite Ethan Hawke performance
I've
ever seen.
I'm a bigger fan of his brother, Johnny Hawks.
Another rewrite done on this one by Haywood Gould.
That's
probably
a pretty cool
closer
name
to what they shot. There's a lot of stuff that he wrote other than the general story and the structure, I would imagine. This guy wrote Cocktail and One Good Cop in the late 80s, early 90s. So
it's a pretty solid one, too, huh?
Yeah, saw a little bit more success later on. Our stars, here's the bread and butter. We're starring William Devane, a young William Devane. He's a character actor extraordinaire. One of the few times, if not the only time, I've ever seen him in a leading role, which is a shame because he's fucking cool. He's good in this movie.
Yeah, he's pretty cool.
You've seen him in stuff like Space Cowboys.
Oh, fuck yeah. Hell yeah.
Probably most well-known for Space Cowboys, unless you've happened upon Rolling Thunder.
Yeah, I think he was in 24 as well.
So, yeah, that makes
so
a lot
Davey
of sense.
So Davey R. Scheister.
Dark Knight Rises.
Call in and let us know.
He was like
we
the president or something.
24.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I've tried to erase the Dark Knight Rises from my brain.
Was that the third one?
Yeah, the movie was fucking garbage.
All those movies were so taxing.
Just garbage.
Ugh.
Tommy Lee Jones in his only on-screen role where he looks under the age of 45,
Bane
I'd say.
Cool.
He's playing Johnny. He's the sidekick character here. William Devane's Major Charles Rain. That's his character.
Yeah, Major Charles Rain.
Along the way, we also have a Linda Haynes.
Linda Haynes.
Playing Linda Forche,
Linda
a.k.a. the chick of the movie.
The Southern Belle.
You gotta throw some ass in your movie, man.
The Southern Belle.
She's
Linda
it.
Forche.
She played a hooker in Coffee, that Pam Grier movie. That's the only other thing I've seen her in.
She
didn't really do much work from what I could tell.
Well, we need to check out Human Experiment.
Ooh, what's that one? That sounds
delightful.
That's
like the major film she did.
Yeah, you said major as if like she gets naked a bunch in it.
So boom.
It seemed like that's,
yes.
It seemed like that's what you were saying with your eyes.
It's this like all-female prison.
Love me a solid female prison movie.
Yeah, and the guards just perform.
Especially the ones that were filmed in the Philippines. Those are always the best.
Hell yeah. They perform torturous experiments on the women.
I like the sound of that.
It's
for
a
sure
horror thriller.
Also, our main baddie is played by a guy you'll all recognize, James Best, a.k.a. Roscoe P. fucking Coltrane.
Damn, Duke boy. You'll be coming by here just any moment now. I can feel it in my bones.
Fuck yeah.
He's not in the movie much, but when he's in it, he's fucking awesome.
Roscoe P.
Playing a greasy,
Coltrane
mean Texan.
Hell yeah.
Tagline of this film, Major Charles Rain has come home to war.
That's upsetting
with
a to hear.
Exclamation point, especially. Yeah. Home to war!
Yeah.
Little plot here. Let's get into the nitty-gritty. A Vietnam veteran, Charles Rain, returns home after years in a POW camp and is treated as a hero. When thugs invade his home to steal the silver coins he received for his service, they mangle his hand and leave him and his family for dead. Rain survives and becomes obsessed with getting revenge. Aided by his loyal friend Johnny Voden, Rain, now wielding a hook for a hand, sets out on his mission of vengeance. That's a cool fucking plot right there.
Yeah, it's pretty solid.
You've sold me. Yeah. Plot synopsis. We watched the movie. Hopefully you watched the movie too, so you understand what we're talking about here. So
hell yeah.
Let's get into bullet points, our next segment here, where we go through our notes. And you can chat about all the things that stood out to us when we were watching this fucking flick, dude.
Yeah. Whew, where do I want to start?
The very beginning is a very good place to start.
Yeah, that's a good point to start.
Mm-hmm.
This movie curried favor with me immediately.
Oh, I like the sound of that.
By having a catchy original song in it.
Oh, that's right what I wanted to get into. First thing you hear.
Yeah, was that, you know, someday I'd go back to San Antonio. Mm-hmm. Denny Brooks
is the man who sang San Antone, a nice country music jam, not like fucking Garth Brooks did. I'm talking real sounding country shit, man.
Like, it's solid late 70s, that like pussy yacht rock country that was around that I love.
Sure.
I love that shit. Where it's just like probably a really pretty man.
I would imagine so.
Playing guitar and singing. Pretty. Like the dude from us. Starsky and Hutch.
Oh yeah, that guy was attractive.
Yeah, he had a. What
you saying?
He had a pretty country song he wrote.
Oh yeah,
it's the same era, it's the same genre, all that. But this is man, because
it's like the last era of country music I can handle. Is that shit? I think the 70s shit.
Yeah,
Kris Kristofferson rolling around singing about trucks and shit.
Right. Yeah. We got bamboozled. We got hoodwinked last week. You got Tia Carrere, future lead singer of Crucial Taunt, and all you get is some shitty, what is it? I Want a Lover with a Slow Hand. Like, that was a real disappointment. This, just right out the gate, you got old Billy Devane. He's flying back in with Tommy Lee Jones. And Tommy Lee Jones, you can tell, he's fucking shell-shocked. He's not.
Oh, yeah.
He's not right the entire fucking movie.
Yeah.
He doesn't even try to pretend to be.
He's a bubble off.
He's just like, all right, if you say just go with it, I'm just going to go with it. And you got Devane. You could tell, like, he's smooth, he's cool, but he's seen some shit.
He's an empty husk of a man.
Yeah, there's something. Something's
there's
off
no longer
inside
anything
there. Yeah.
Inside of him.
He's just pretty much replicating what he thinks a human should be. And all the while, this sweet little Denny Brooks ditty is playing is going back to San Antone.
The thing I love about San Antone and how great it fits with this movie is just the lyrics just about going back to San Antonio and how great it is. It's just full of just empty niceties and just like generic pleasantness.
Right.
Just like all these like empty fucking celebrations they're throwing for him as he comes back from being tortured by the fucking Viet Cong for like 5 years.
Well, he's gone for 8 years.
He gets these dumb little parades and these tiny ceremonies, and he's got to fucking stand there and act like he cares or like it means anything to him.
Yeah.
And it's just all politeness and pleasantries and like no genuine emotion.
Yeah.
Just like this fucking song here.
The song also has got a little bit of like a longingness in it too. There's an underlying sadness to the song.
Pretty much everything recorded in the 70s has some sadness in it. It was a sad fucking decade.
Just works out really fucking well. So old Billy, or we'll call him by his name, or it doesn't matter really. Charles Rain, Charles Rain. That's a cool name.
Major Rain. That's close to Major Pain.
Maybe
crossover movie. I'd like to watch that shit.
Ooh, I'd watch the shit out of that.
That sounds real good.
Major Pain. That's a really good movie.
Yeah, it's one of your favorites. I know
Hell yeah. Man, I just got me thinking about Damon Wayans.
All right, we'll pause
you
this.
Just derailed
we'll go
me.
Watch Major Pain.
Yeah.
Get it out of your system.
This
and we'll
is,
come back and
I mean,
record
we are,
the rest of this.
We are on the 25th anniversary of the very last episode of In Living Color.
Oh, wow. I didn't read that Vox article.
So, you know, touching home here. I'm going to pull myself together.
Yeah, well, emotions are running strong here in Baby Oil and Blow Studios this week.
So, Charles Rain is greeted by his wife and turd little kid who's like...
This is like the next bullet point I want to get into is just that Charles Rain's life sucks, man. Like... Send me back to Vietnam. This fucking sucks.
He gets picked up real quick by the family. There's talk of this policeman, Cliff, and he's all there, and he's like, "Ooh, it's good to see you, Chuck. Really look up to
give
you.
You and your family are right back to your house.
You're a cool guy." And like immediately I looked at this guy, and I was like, he was balling your wife while you were
Who's this
overseas, bro. I think they called him Jody, back then. That was the term.
Okay, yeah.
It was a real thing.
That's a
for the guy that was banging your lady.
Some slanguage.
No, this was a real thing back in Vietnam.
Oh, yeah, I'm following you.
The guy that was banging your lady mm-hmm. while you were overseas was always Jody.
This is like a precursor to the incels, Chads, I think.
Yeah, yeah, a little pretty bit. Much, yeah.
These are the men who are having sex that we hate.
Yeah. So
I fucking hated Jody. This guy's a turd.
Yeah, you know,
Ferguson.
You know this dude's, you know, he's in a little deep. And Charles Rain, like, again, he's like, you know, I'm a fucking husk of a man. But
yeah, I'm going to be polite. He's going to smile and nod as all these people are saying bullshit to me that I don't give a fuck about.
The whole dynamic with his son, he's all like, this kid doesn't really know who I am. And the kid's like, Donnie from Detective James T. Lunatic. Like, I just want to play wiffle ball, daddy.
That's a good point.
Like, he's really weird. And at first I was like, he's just going to hate this kid or something.
It seems like this kid would be like more freaked out that this man who he doesn't know who's like been tortured in the jungle for the last 8 years is like coming home. But he seems pretty stoked. Just like, hey, dad, I got this patch that was yours. I bought a gun, huh?
Yeah, my old man worked out 5 days a week, was jacked to shit, and always talked to us through clenched teeth.
Oh, yeah.
And that was enough to make you walk around with a tight asshole.
That's how you got to relate to children.
And again, I'm talking like when I was 10, like this kid's age. Last thing I would want is my mom to be like, hey, you know your dad you never met?
Uh-huh.
Well, he got tortured for 8 years and he's coming home tomorrow.
He's going to be around now.
Yeah. I wouldn't want that.
No, it sounds terrible.
I'd be terrified.
This kid, like, just I don't know.
Will you have a catch with me, daddy?
Yeah. That's one of the things that I walk away from this movie, like, not quite sure of, like, what Rain's reaction to his kid is. Because, like, everything else he seems pretty fucking just put off by, but he seems to be generally, like, pretty into his kid. Like,
I was going to say, I was just going to get to the point. They never state it. But it's kind of implied that clearly the kid was like the only thing that he was thinking about getting back home
to. That's kind of the feeling I got too.
Because the wife drops the bombshell on him, like, hey.
He's home. Yeah. He cracks open his first beer post-POW.
Hell yeah.
He hasn't even drank down the fucking neck.
First fucking Steve
like,
Weiser.
By the way, I've been fucking another dude.
Yeah.
And then he's kind of just like, oh, yeah, whatever. I don't care. I'm dead inside. But it's not just like, yeah, you're back, though. Great. It's just like, yeah, but also I'm going to be marrying this guy. So you got to fucking get out of here.
Oh, you can keep sleeping in the shed like you've been doing, which is pretty fucking cool.
Okay. Torture shed is another one of my bullet points. I wanted to come up here for a second. A little bit more about how this early establishment of how much his life sucks. Like, so he's got this kid, maybe that's going to work out, but the wife thing's definitely not going to work out. And then we just instantly go into PTSD montages.
Right.
Like this full-on fucking great montages of him flashing back. Just the torture, just people yelling Asian words in his ear.
Him just like back home in his shed, in his backyard.
All juxtaposed.
Sitting in his boxers.
With this stupid just like ceremony.
Balled up in the corner, just like looking off in the distance like, It's up there for me with what's-his-face's nude breaking the mirror scene in Apocalypse
Now.
Oh,
yeah, Martin Sheen in those early. Yeah, that's some similar emotions going on, I think. So basically, this guy's fucking, he can't live in his house anymore because fucking old boy cop's bawling his wife and playing catch with his son. See, that was the thing, too, because that was the thing that kind of threw me off because it was just like, hey, he seems like he's actually into the kid and cares about the kid.
Yeah.
But then when cop comes along and interrupts their catch, he's just like, yeah, you play catch with him. I'm going back into the torture shed. So I'm like, does he care about the kid? Like, I don't know.
He knew he had to separate himself from the situation. Or else he'd have a fucking Vietnam flashback and murder Cliff,
fucking
the cop.
That guy's belly open and tying his intestines around
And then
his
the
neck.
Kid would never want to talk to him because he'd be like, this is what I was worried about when mom said that tortured guy was coming to live with us.
Mom said it was going to be okay. I tried to tell her. So literally every like inch of this torture shed he's sleeping in has a gun hung on it on the wall.
Oh,
there's no
guns
spot
everywhere.
On the wall where there's not a gun hanging somewhere,
yeah.
Which is just fucking awesome. And We get one of the early great fucking scenes.
Oh, it's probably the best scene in the movie.
It might be,
man,
my MVP when old fucking cop comes in and wants to have the talk. Just like, hey, we cool.
old girl tried to be like, I'm going to be raising your son. I'm leaving you for that cop.
I'm definitely fucking your wife.
She's like complaining to cop guy. She's like, he won't talk anymore about it. Like, I don't know what to do. And he's like, relax, baby. I'm the new man in your
life. I'll handle this.
I've got this.
Ugh, flicks his feathered hair around.
And so he goes into the shed and he's just, I don't know if this was planned or what. Dude's fucking sweating bullets in this scene, like visibly dripping.
Super sweaty movie all the way through, which I always love. Any sort of movie where just people are sweaty.
Yeah,
this fucking Dwayne Johnson's the modern master of this. I feel like he's the only guy who's getting really sweaty in movies anymore. In the 70s, you saw it much more. But yeah, he's just lightly skipping rope. It just looks like he fucking got out of a pool.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking the fucking cop too, Cliff.
Yeah.
He just walks in. And like
playing some light catch out in the yard.
Yeah, he's like, oh, let's have a drink. And then 2 seconds later, he's just fucking full on flop sweat.
Just adds to the 70s grime.
Oh, yeah. And also, when he offers him a drink, it's from our show sponsor.
Oh, yeah.
A little Wild Turkey.
Shout out to the turkey, my man. Because back in the 70s, they knew what was up.
Wild Turkey Premium Bourbon is made in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Now, that's a far cry from them Chardonnay quaffing, tree-hugging, designer water-swilling, hip-hop techno-retro, collagen-injected, private part piercing, herbal tea-sipping folks who wouldn't know a fine bourbon if they was swimming in it. Yes, sir, Wild Turkey. Not the latest thing. The genuine thing.
You know, Wild Turkey, you gotta...
It's one of the few things visible in this torture shed that isn't a gun, the right. Wild Turkey.
Right. People give
it... I think we gotta get some guns in here.
People give it a bad rap because it's such a high proof, and it's like, you gotta be insane.
That 101's a quality product.
You gotta be insane.
Treat yourself, go out there and pick some up.
This is a gentleman's drink. You can get it at the Jewels for $25. Go home, treat yourself. Anyways, I digress.
So we're playing mind games here, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to yell at him. He's not going to get angry.
No.
Quite frankly, I think he prefers to be sleeping out in this torture shed and not have to be married to anybody. Yeah. So he's fine with this, but he still wants to fuck with this guy.
Yeah.
So what's he do? He has him tie him up the way that the fucking Viet Cong used to tie him up with his arms all like fucking submission moved behind his back.
It starts because the cop's like, man, I can't imagine what you went through.
Yeah, you want to know about it?
Yeah.
You
want to
know about it?
He finally's just like, I'm going to tell you. Yeah, he goes pretty Vince McMahon.
Love everything going on in this fucking torture shed.
So
anytime we're in there in the movie, I'm fucking happy.
Yeah, so like you said, he's tying him up. And he's like, yeah, you got to tie the arms together. And he's doing it. And he's like, nah, tighter. You got to do it tighter. He's like, oh, okay, man.
Pull until you hear the bones crack.
Oh, man, it's one of the coolest
things. Is there anything fucking more awkward than trying to, like, bro down with the guy whose wife you stole and be like, are we cool? And then he makes you tie him up and torture him? This cop's leaving this shed wigged out.
They show the scene where he's pulling on his arms, and they keep doing this moving of the camera where it's like they focus on Charles Rain's face. He's like, you gotta pull it. Keep pulling my arms, you motherfucker. You know, he's letting him have it. And then it just like scans back and they show the cop's face and he's just like pouring sweat and trying to like pull the dude's arms and keep his
shit
together.
Clearly emotionally confused, like maybe half chubbed up, but definitely super afraid.
It was
That's the best way to be, half chubbed up but super afraid.
It's so good. It made me feel as uncomfortable as I did as a 12-year-old watching Marcellus Wallace get fucked by a grown man.
Sitting next to your father, because that's how I experienced that movie for the first time.
My best friend's mother.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, that's far more sexual than the situation I found myself in. Yeah. So then after this all goes down, he says... one of my favorite lines from this movie, the one that always stuck to me, it's the first time I was talking to him, he's talking about how you get through torture and how you beat your torturers. And he says, you learn to love the rope. That's how you beat it. You learn to love the people torturing you, and they don't know you're beating them.
They don't know.
And that's just how he gets through this whole fucking movie. Just he taught himself to love pain, to love torment. So just this whole movie, he just seeks it out. And like...
Yeah.
The only time we see, like, any life in his eyes or, like, with the Tommy Lee Jones character too, when they get into action and the fucking bullets are flying and shit's going wrong, suddenly they got smiles on their
faces.
These dead men.
Shit goes a little bit crazy, like left to center. It doesn't even have to be guns. Like anytime, like it's tense.
All I can feel anymore is relaxed. Pain. So that's all I want to feel.
Yeah. So, weird guy.
Pretty weird. So yeah, life sucks. Torture Shed's pretty awesome. This
Torture
is our
Shed's
setup.
Amazing.
This is all shit before any sort of plot even kicks in. This is everything's tense, everything's weird, everybody's freaking out, and fucking the story hasn't even started.
Yeah, so other shit happens, you know, they keep giving him shit because he's a war hero. They give him a brand new car, they give him a suitcase full of silver dollars.
Silver dollars.
It was 2,378 silver dollars.
The weirdest thing to give to somebody.
One silver dollar for every day he was imprisoned.
Sorry you got tortured.
Plus one
Here's
for
a bunch
good
of
luck.
Silver dollars.
Well, I found out that translates to like $14,500.
Oh yeah.
These days.
Yeah. I wonder if it was just like a face currency value in 1970s money, because the plot does kick in when Roscoe P. Coltrane and a group of thugs come to his house to steal these because he saw them on the news.
Yeah, everything's in the news and in the papers. And
I'm just like, damn, this is a pretty serious crime these guys are committing over a matter of $2,300. How fucking hard up are these dudes?
But again, you're talking, by today's standards, 14 grand. And I could see low-level scumbags.
And these
being
guys
like,
are definitely low-level scumbags.
Like, hey, we got a bullshit posse.
Yeah.
That's what
I'm
go
loving
fucking
about this movie.
Steamroll this guy.
We're either in Texas or we're in Mexico, and everybody's a low-level scumbag. And you could tell, like, a lot of this shit was shot without permits. Like, we're just out on the street. Most of the people are not, like, paid extras. They're just the real people who were tooling around. It just gives this thing, like, a real gritty, real feel, even though a lot of the shit that's happening is, like, over-the-top ridiculous.
So these dudes show up to take his money, and it's, man, one of my favorite things in this movie occurs when these guys show up.
He's home alone. He pops in the door, and these guys are already there, and they just jump him, take him by surprise.
Nate, you know I played in bands for years.
Yeah, I do. That's why you're so fucking deaf.
I'm getting back into music.
Oh, God, you hate music.
Doesn't matter. I just want to name a band. Automatic Slim.
That's
the coolest
name,
fucking name in the world.
For fucking sure, yeah.
So he's like the main muscle for the posse. He ain't the biggest dude in the group. That would probably be Fat Ed.
Definitely Fat Ed.
But Automatic Slim is
he's kind of like their Rosie, to put it in Point Break terms. Like he's the guy getting the fucking business done.
He's clearly the craziest of the group, and he's willing to go that like extra fucking mile that other people aren't.
Oh yeah,
because they still have that little bit of humanity in them.
Any fucking crew you're rolling with has to have that guy.
Automatic Slim's dead inside.
Wild card.
Yeah, he's fucking great. So the whole gang's there. They're like, give us the fucking money. We'll torture you, bro. And he's like, go ahead, man.
Well, we've established that I love torture, so let's get this thing going.
To quote cult hero Necro Butcher, all you're doing is making my dick hard.
Yeah, that's a direct quote.
So they're beating the shit out of him. They're like, yeah, we're going to fuck you up, pal. And then they're like, none of this is working.
No emotions.
Roscoe.
Steely stone-faced.
Roscoe's like, well, I got a fucking ideal. Like, let's put this guy's hand in a garbage disposal. That'll get them talking.
We get once they turn this shit on and there's blood splattering and his bones are crunching and that hand's going away, we go back into that PTSD montage. Yeah. He's zoned out. He's back in the fucking jungle.
Titi Mao!
That's when his idiot little kid and his wife come home and are
fucking
like,
boners.
Ah, we're back from a grocery. Oh, shit!
Oh, something bad's happening.
So this guy's giving up his fucking hand. He's taking a serious beating. He's not going to tell them where the fucking silver dollars are. He's holding strong like a boss. He's going to beat these guys until his dumb little kid is instantly just like, I know where you
are. Fucking Donnie,
Don't cut off his other hand. You got a PTSD dad fucking living out in your shed surrounded by guns. I'll tell you what, you want him to have no hands.
It makes
it harder for him to beat the shit out of you.
First of all,
this kid would have had some beatings coming.
Oh, yeah, this kid should have realized okay, I save my dad, I spare his life.
Mm-hmm.
The guy's just going to go nuts and kill everyone then.
He's going to hate me because I gave up his precious silver dollars.
Yeah, yeah. This kid's an idiot.
So, of course, they get the silver dollars, they got everything they want, but now this kid and the wife have seen him, so they got to murder the wife and the child.
Yeah, Roscoe's like Fat Ed and the other guy, you know, kick rocks, hit the bricks, we'll meet up with you in El Paso.
Sure.
Or wherever the fuck they went to.
It's definitely where Johnny lives.
Oh, no, Villanueva.
Yeah, that's where he goes first. He's when he starts.
Head over to Villanueva.
Out on his journey to find them.
And so he and Automatic Slim stay, and he gives pulls a piece out himself, and he gives Automatic Slim the old "you know what to do" look.
You know, kill that woman and child. We've done these things before, so all I have to do is nod. So you get my meaning.
Roscoe kills the wife and the kid, and then Automatic's just like, "Whoop, I got to do what he says," and then shoots Charles Rain point blank, but apparently doesn't kill him, or else we'd have a really short movie.
Yeah, that's jump cut.
Oh, that hand?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you read. They never show it. Like, it's just it's implied.
And then they put a towel over it and get, like, a bloody towel.
Originally,
they were going to cut off his hand for real because they couldn't do special effects?
No, they did a shot with the hand getting mangled.
Ooh, I would have loved to have seen that.
And when
shit.
They showed it in test audiences?
Yeah, yeah.
One woman fainted. Another man ran to the front counter and demanded his money back, and then another man immediately ran out the theater to his car and proceeded to crash into another car.
Yeah, from what I understand, there was kind of a small-scale riot when this was shown to test audiences, who had just sat through a Dirty Harry sequel prior to this, so these aren't the sort of people who, like, you know, couldn't deal with action shit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is why it lost distribution for a while. It was going to get put out by a bigger studio, ended up having to get put out by a smaller company.
Yeah.
But I think still made a lot of money, I think, for that AIP or whoever was it put it out.
Yeah, American something press.
Very small. Pre-80s, so you don't really have exact numbers, but I've seen thrown around that it was made for about $5 million and brought in quite a bit. It was something of a success at the box office, so
good
for them for sticking with it and not cutting too much out, because I think it was Fox, once that shit happened, shit their pants and wanted to edit everything out of it.
Yeah, they were terrified of this movie.
So, rightfully so, because this movie kicks dick.
So we've established it doesn't just kick dick. It does other things. I think we're about to get to that. Jumping ahead now. So the kid's dead. The wife's dead. Charles Rain's in the hospital without a hand, and he's putting his life back together, and he's just in the hospital like, yep, everything's fine.
Just trying to figure out how to do things one-handed. I only got one hand now, better start practicing.
But he doesn't do it when anybody's around. Like, whenever anybody's around, when he gets the Cadillac and the money, it's given to him by a hot Southern lady. That's Linda LeCher or whatever.
Fauché.
And so she keeps coming around because she established earlier she wants to suck his dick, married or not. Like, mm-hmm. she wants that D.
And now the wife's completely out of the picture.
So she's just like living in the hospital room now.
Braless, pointy titty, just like hanging out.
Tommy Lee comes to the hospital.
That was one part I liked at the very beginning. One of the first things he says to his wife after getting back from Vietnam is,
"See, you're not wearing your brassiere anymore.
She's like, yeah, nobody wears those anymore. Yeah. And boy, she wasn't kidding. Nobody in this movie wears a bra. And it's glorious.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And we need to get back to it. New York, you've been working hard on that free the nipple thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to say,
one of the few things New York's doing that I just can't get completely behind.
Baby Oil and Blow, it's an action movie podcast. Mm-hmm. And people might think it's a He-Man hating or women hating club, you know? No. We're very on board with you guys. Yep. Free the nipple. We support it.
Free the nipple.
We're just a couple of feminists
hashtag
here.
Hashtag free the nipple. Also, hashtag Bush is back.
Bush is back.
As far as our ladies go, we're full 1970s throwbacks.
Yeah. Bush.
Tan lines, no bras, fucking no waxing.
Oh, my God. Oh, man. When they drop the shirt and the titties come out and there's just those white lines.
You're painting a picture. Oof. A glorious picture in my head right now.
Oh, and those the panty tan line where it's not just like a fucking thong. Every girl wears a thong now. No. I want to see both cheeks pale white,
low
but the thigh.
Low on the hip.
The thigh is all tan, though, you know?
One of my bullet points I want to get into is just Linda as a character.
Okay.
Because I really like Linda the actress. I really like Linda the character. I think she adds a lot to this movie, a lot of humanity.
I agree.
Because if she wasn't in here tagging along, once we start the whole quest for vengeance, this would just be like a pretty dry movie about like a soulless husk of a man.
Yeah.
And this chick's a mess, dude. So she's got all sorts of interesting
things going on. She's a fucking
train
wreck.
And what I love about her is just...
I dated a couple Lindas,
I was just
going
to say, I know 1,000 Lindas, and I think we all know this exact fucking girl. This girl who's constantly just like... This girl for A, who's like a cute little number. So what she's done her whole life is she's just relied on her looks.
Correct.
And not really like
become
a person in any other way.
No.
Basically, all she does is hang around, either working at a bar or drinking at a bar if she's not working. She doesn't have any sort of internal life, so the only thing that matters is her relationships.
Correct.
And just all of her focus, all of her attention goes on that.
Yeah.
And then you factor in the daddy issues.
Oh, yeah.
So her relationship that she's so focused on, it's never going to be with a solid, stable guy.
No.
It's going to be with these fucking complete creeps, whoever's going to cause as much chaos as possible. And what this girl's doing, man, she's riding a fucking train that's going straight into the side of a mountain. She's doing all this hard partying. All she has is her looks. She's never going to be in a relationship that lasts. One of these days, that hard partying's going to make her fucking looks go south.
And she even hints to it.
And then
she's
all over.
She's like, you should fucking see me in the morning.
Absolutely.
After a night of hard partying.
That's what I love, that she knows what
she's
doing.
She's fully aware. She is self-aware.
But she can't stop it. She knows who she is, and she's just leaning into it. And I'm just like, I fucking know this girl. This is a real-ass character.
Just like Charles Raine needs the torture to feel anything, she needs the insanity to feel anything.
Yeah, and Linda Haynes, like I said, the only other thing I'd seen her in is Coffee, and just like, she's pretty good in this movie. Like, I don't know why she didn't do more stuff.
We're going to see her in Human Experiment.
She's cute. She can act. And she did a lot of great things in Human Experiment. I can't wait to see it.
Oh, yeah. Spoiler alert. I looked up some images.
Oh,
and,
man. Whew,
she delivers, pal.
Linda Haynes.
She delivers.
Baby oil and blow, 2 thumbs up.
Oh, to something up, you know what I'm saying? Good thing there's no such thing as the boner police, or I'd need an attorney.
I don't know. What would the boner police do? That'd be a terrible job.
Yeah, I don't know. I was quoting Chris Parnell in a Hot Rod.
Okay.
It's one of my favorite movies. That's so underrated.
Very underrated.
So underrated.
Comedy of the last...
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
It's like 2006.
Maybe not even, because I was just going to say comedy of the last 10, 15 years, but I'm like, do they even make comedies anymore? I think all they make is superhero movies now.
Yeah,
I don't think
be.
Studios are even making comedies.
Oh, no, Seth Rogen's got that new Dan Hogan movie he made.
Oh, I can't wait. That looks great.
That looks good.
Sarcasm.
So, anyways.
So, at this point,
Major
this movie,
Crazy's got Crazy
once
Blonde.
Once he's out of the jail, the hospital, this movie just becomes road tripping my prize Cadillac. Yeah. We're driving around fucking hunting down these people that killed my family. And we're going to take them out.
So
it's a lot of shakedowns and, like, dirty Mexican bars.
Yeah, they're just driving across all Mexico being like... And he just keeps sending her in as bait, where she keeps almost getting raped by swarthy Mexican guys.
There's a few close calls, but, you know, he's hanging around with a sawed-off shotgun in his hook hand, which he's now sawed into being a super sharp, real hook hand.
He's like, look, woman, I'm not going to let him rape you. I'm going to get in there before anything happens. And the first one is the best, because the dude's like... She's like, does anybody know who a Fat Ed is? And old boy's like, oh, yeah, I know Fat Ed.
Yeah, I know Fat Ed.
And he takes her in the back.
We're going to go into a dirty kitchen behind this bar.
It was the kitchen from Gummo, I'm pretty sure.
It looked exactly like it. And I was like, this is like a house's kitchen. This isn't like a business's kitchen.
It was pretty cool.
What's going on in this building?
So this swarthy dude, he's just like, oh, yeah, Fat Ed, he good friend. Like, he takes care of all of us.
Is that your Mexican accent we're doing right now?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Hey, that
sounds pretty good.
Oh,
man.
What country do you think this is?
I'm south of the border. I've been transported.
I'm just doing the car attendant in Ferris Bueller now.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
You know, he was the original drummer for Sonic Youth.
Yeah, I was just going to say. He's a guy that popped up here and there, and then you didn't really see him much more.
That's a shame.
He had his 15 minutes, though, where he was transitioning into film.
So my favorite part here comes when old boy just starts grabbing her titties, just like straight grabbing a handful of titty.
I mean, fucking, she's wearing a tank top, no bra. How could you think about anything else?
And she keeps pulling away and be like, stop it, stop it. And he just,
I'm saying I don't blame this guy.
He keeps replying with my favorite line of the film. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay.
That's right. Uh-huh.
That's cool, man.
It's like, it's similarly, the second bar they go into, the guy's just like, oh, no, no. Me and him are friends. We share. When, like, she thinks he's looking for fucking, was it Fat Ed again? Yeah. She's looking for the thing. She's like, no, no, no. It's we're friends. We're friends. We share.
Yeah.
Like, she's got no say in the matter. And he's not saying it in an aggressive way. I think he just literally is like, no, no. Like, you're being weird. Like,
yeah.
We fuck each other's chicks.
Yeah,
like,
don't be weird about
God,
this.
God, what's your problem?
So, either way, Charles Rain comes in, starts kicking ass both times. Finally, he gets to one of the bars and beats around enough Mexican dudes to where Automatic Slim shows up.
Mm-hmm.
This is our first encounter with Automatic Slim since he tried to kill Charles Rain.
I gotta tell you, it felt good to have him back.
Yeah, it was. It was great to see him
Anytime
walk through
he
that
was
door.
Back on the screen, I was loving it.
And so, great little bar fight breaks out. Charles Rain throws a table at somebody.
The things I love about the fights and the violence in this movie is they're just fucking sloppy and weird. It's not like
they're visceral. They're natural.
Shit.
Yeah,
you get in movies it's these
like,
days.
If you were in
Charles
like a,
Rain doesn't know fucking karate.
Right.
Like,
if you were in a kill or be killed situation, I'm sure he was trained in the military to
sure,
fight
yeah.
to an extent.
But he's throwing a lot of
he's
haymakers.
Totally, right. It's just a wounded animal that's cornered, and that's how he fights the entire movie. It's just. What's around me? What can I maim somebody with? And he's got the fucking sharpened hook, like you said. And there's the point where two guys get the drop on him and they back him towards like the pool cues. And he grabs.
I'm gonna start swinging around pool cues.
He grabs the bottom thick end of one and in his real hand, and then he's got the hook on the other hand, and he's just swinging them violently at both of them. And he's just got this look on his face like, like I'll do it, man.
Someday.
I'll fucking cut you or hit you.
Someday when we finally retire to the real sleazy trash bar on the other side of town, just like away from the medium sleazy bar we go to now, I want to be that guy, man. I want to be hook hand guy swinging around pool cues. I can't wait to get to that point.
Yeah, you could lose that hand in a pizza oven.
Something's going to happen to this hand. I'll make it happen. I don't know. Maybe we'll get drunk and drive over it tonight.
Fuck yeah. You know we love drinking and driving.
You love pulling stunts after you've been drinking. This could work out great for me.
I get lit. I'm like, let's do some shit, you know?
Count how many things I've seen you fall off of trying to climb while drunk.
Three years in a row, your front yard, the same tree. I fell off a ladder trying to get into the tree. The first year, the second year, I fell out of the tree after getting in the tree.
Yeah.
And then the third year, I fell out of the tree onto the ladder.
And then a year after that, I think you face planted out of a wheelchair you were driving down the driveway.
And then you
hit a crack.
I think that was the same year as the third one.
Oh, okay.
But
you like hurt yourself for like weeks each one of these times.
Oh, right.
And never learned your lesson.
No.
Which is the lesson here? Never learn your lesson.
No, the lesson is...
Words to live by.
And the lesson is, and Charles Rain is in the same camp as I am, you get back up, man, and you go back at it.
Yeah.
You don't admit defeat.
Get back in that bar fight.
Yeah. So anyways, he's they're getting the drop on him, and then Automatic Slim gets a little too close, and what happens, Nate?
This is where we get hooked to the dick.
Big ol' hook to the dick.
Yeah, there's a few fucking highlights to this movie. Big moments. Best moments of the movie. In the conversation is fucking Charles Rain burying his hook right in fucking Slim's dick. Just like, that's his last resort.
Yeah.
He's about to lose this fight. Hook to the dick.
He's already put it through some Mexican dude's hand.
Yeah. He tells him, careful, you could lose a hand that way.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
That's great
shit.
Because
he already lost his fucking hand.
So we've established.
Some cold-blooded shit to say.
We've established this is a brutal weapon here. And then, bam, even more so, he gets a hold of fucking Automatic Slim's dick. And immediately, Slim's like, everybody just back the fuck up. Leave him alone. Don't touch the guy.
I want to get out of this with at least like half a dick still left.
And he does. And fucking Charles Rain gets away and drives off. And Automatic Slim, he's badass. He heals up. He's no selling it the rest of the movie.
Yeah, he's back in the fucking whorehouse soon after.
He's plowing premium El Paso prostitutes. Mm-hmm. He's nailing
the dream
it.
Life.
Either way, what happens in between here and the end?
Yada,
they
yada,
keep driving
yada.
Around.
He's doing some sleuthing work. He eventually figures out they're all at this whorehouse
None
in Tijuana.
None of it really matters, yeah.
So then he's
it's
going
a
to
slow
get
burn.
His old buddy Johnny back.
Yeah, then here's where business picks
and my
up.
My next bullet point is Johnny's life.
Yes.
It sucks too, man. Not in the same way Charles Raine's life sucks, but man, does his life suck.
I'm going to drop a little knowledge on you, a little wisdom
okay.
here.
Ooh. I'm ready for this.
I'm hoping one of the things that you think sucks the most about Johnny's life,
mm-hmm.
but you love the most,
mm-hmm.
was Johnny's family.
Yeah, Johnny's family, especially his fucking brother, is coolest. It reminded me a lot of the shit going on in Nebraska, that fucking Alexander Payne movie.
Right.
Where they got to go fucking visit their family, and they're all fucking just sleazebags.
And they're just talking about how fast you can drive from one city to another.
And they just live in this tiny little shit bubble world where they're concerned with fucking nothing. Yeah. Just having fucking conversations that are just mind-numbingly dull.
You boys remember your cousin David?
Bart?
Lee?
Cole?
Hey.
Man, it's been a long time since we all met as kids. What are you guys up to?
Not much.
Getting bit by catfish. This economy has just tore up Hawthorne, Davy. Things are hard for young men.
Yeah, I'm in the home theater and electronics business myself. It's a rough time, I'll tell you that.
Oh my God, it's on me. I got it.
You were screaming like a woman in labor with...
Cole here did some jail.
Don't bring that up.
Bitch lied through her teeth.
I will not have that language in my house.
Sorry, Ma.
Now, Davy, you sit down. You must be starving. I made sandwiches.
It's my job to keep him in there. For a skinny boy, that boy's stout. I mean, I was having to put out a load.
So how long it take you to get here?
I don't know. We got sort of waylaid in Rapid City. That's where Dad had his little accident.
But how long total?
Couple days, I guess.
From Billings?
Yeah.
How far is that?
Probably about 750 miles.
It took you 2 days to drive 750 miles. Were you driving a dump truck or something?
It's a Subaru.
Outback. Hell, I drove up from Dallas one time. That's 850 miles. I'd done that in 8 hours.
That's like over 100 miles an hour.
Oh, Bart was moving.
Here you go, Davey. Dig in.
Thank you.
Shit. 2 days from Montana. Some bitch must have been driving in reverse.
And Johnny has just fucking been all around the world.
Yeah.
Seen the craziest shit you could fucking see. And he's just got to sit there stone-faced and silent and act like he's still a part of this world. Like he gives a shit about his stupid fucking wife.
Yeah. So they're sitting in the...
fat fucking sister.
They're sitting in the living room. The whole family's talking. Their topic of conversation is Charles Raine's cool red Cadillac that was given to him for being a war hero.
Oh, yeah.
And
talking about the cars.
The whole time, Charles Raine and Johnny aren't saying a goddamn word. They're both just got that thousand-yard stare.
Uh-huh.
While the whole family's just like, that's the last great, that was a great American car right there. I buy American. Granddaddy, he don't like to, or daddy, he don't like to buy anything that ain't white.
Some
like,
racist
blah, blah,
shit
blah.
Getting thrown around in this convo.
So, I really like the fat brother. You know who that was?
Oh, no. Who are we looking at?
That's Franklin. Our wheelchair-bound hero in the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, okay.
With a mustache.
Yeah, not overacting as much here as he was in Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But, yeah, mustachioed and still just playing like a fucking drip.
Yeah, and Daddy is a cutthroat in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
Oh, holy shit. We got some Toby Hooper connections.
So we got some
right
we got
left.
Some Texas Chainsaw showing up right here. And this is Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm starting to think that some of these guys are just full on Texans and just show up in any movie that's based around
Very
Texas.
Fucking possible.
From like the late 70s to early
Very
80s.
Fucking possible.
So that was pretty cool for me. I enjoyed
it. Favorite part of the convo is where the one chick, I think it's like the sister or whatever, is talking to Tommy Lee Jones. She's like, "Do you remember Don Visor?" And he's like, "No." She's like, "Oh, come on. Yeah, you do. Like,
he played 2 years with the Dallas Cowboys."
And the fucking brother's like, "Hell, he knows who Don Visor is. Everybody knows who Don Visor is.
You texted me at that point in the movie, oh, what time do you want to do this shit? And I just wanted to text you, everybody knows who Don Visor is.
Reminded me of that great fucking line in Raising Arizona, where it's just the narration just goes, and Nathan Arizona, oh hell. Yeah. You know who he is.
You know who he is.
Just these small little worlds these people live in, and they don't even realize they live in such tiny little worlds.
Oh, it was good shit. So finally, fucking Charles Rain and Johnny excuse themselves.
Get out of this lame fucking dinner. We got some real shit to talk about.
And Charles Rain's like, I found the dudes. And he doesn't have to be like, will you go with me? As soon as he's like, I found the
immediately
dudes.
Immediately the most baller fucking response ever.
I'm sorry about all this, Major.
That's all right, John. I found them.
Who?
The man who killed my son.
I'll just get my gear.
They're in a whorehouse over in Juarez right now. There's the four that came into my home, and there's 8 or 10 others.
Let's go clean them up.
Clean them up? What a cool thing to say.
But he goes, let me get my gear, and immediately turns around to a closet and just starts packing up with guns and shit. And when he tells him, he turns around to throw the shotgun into the bag, and that's when he's telling him, oh, there's four in particular, two of them, I need to have. Everybody else is free game. You can kill them. But when he, throws out the numbers, Tommy Lee Jones, for the first time in a long time, smiles real big.
Hell yeah.
He's just like, yeah, I'm happy.
We've had a slow burn through this movie. You got the fucking dick to the, or the hook to the dick. You got the hand in the fucking garbage disposal. But other than this, it's been real quiet. But now these two fucking assholes in full fucking dress, just like they're wearing their fucking Air Force gear.
Right.
They just,
the dress, like
everybody
not,
else
not
is
like the,
got
the,
coffee and dessert.
Not in the shit. Military outfit. We're talking their dress uniform.
They just walk through the living room with bags of guns, dressed to the nines.
To the kitchen table.
And just leave. Everybody else is like, what the fuck is happening?
His wife's like, well, what about dinner? Dinner's on the table. And he doesn't really even acknowledge it. He just turns to the old man and goes, goodbye, daddy. And that's it. I love how they still just instill those Texas values on you to where he's just
also,
like,
young Tommy Lee looking pretty good in his fucking his dress clothes. He had a tight little butt back in the day.
He's pretty built there. So shit's on. He figured out where they're at. He takes
the
Tommy
slow
Lee
burn
Jones.
Is over. Yeah. Now we're in the end game and this movie goes fucking nuts.
And Tommy Lee's like, well, what do we do? And he's like, you go in there. He's like, they're gonna recognize me. You go in there, get a whore, take her upstairs. Listen for me. When I come in, I'm going to tap my gun like this. You're going to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
When I do, take your stance.
Yeah.
Then we wait for the shooting. And then when you hear the shooting, come on out.
So like with the violence, you get a little bit of trickle of violence throughout this movie. And then suddenly a huge explosion of violence. Yeah. Also, this whole movie, you get a little trickle of boobs. Nobody's wearing bras.
Right.
But then there's just an explosion of bare tits.
This whole
thing. All at once, this movie just pops off.
This whole thing is like a water main or a pipe in your house that's been dripping. Mm-hmm. And you're I should address that. I should address that. I should address that.
Get to it
and then
tomorrow.
One day, boom, fucker goes out.
One day, your college roommate tries to grind about 10 pounds of spaghetti down the garbage disposal, blowing through the pipes in the basement, which then pours water all over the outlets that the washer and dryer are hooked up to. And this happens for a good 40 minutes until I get home. And then the other two who live there just take me down and point to it like, check out what's happened. And then I'm like, turn off the water, you fucking idiots.
This is a hypothetical, right?
Yeah, I'm just this is what it would be like a little bit.
If that kind of thing could ever
occur. Yeah, I'm trying to paint a picture. It's just, I'm coming up with shit off the cuff here.
So if there are people that dumb enough you know, you're talking about a potential to like burn carpet with toast right there. That's just, it's not possible, pal.
Yeah, that would probably be the same roommate if we were talking about those hypothetical things happening.
How about that? How about that? So, shits on.
Burnt shits toast on. To a tiny little black smoldering brick.
He's still on it. I like it.
Right next to the sink. Instead of throwing it in the sink and turning the water on, runs through the entire kitchen, runs through the entire living room, juggling the smoking toast, opens the front door, throws it out in the hallway.
This is what you sleep in your shed and think about right here. This is your flashback. Oh, God,
if I still had to have roommates, I'd be fucking living in a torture shed. Oh, that's for damn sure.
Goddamn. So the whole setup's great. Like, Tommy Lee Jones getting the hooker, and like he goes in there and he's like, oh, I want a white one. Like, I'm still from Texas and kind of racist.
Yeah, I've heard Paul Schrader, one of his problems with this finished product that his name is all over is just how fucking fascist and racist it is. Yeah. It's kind of like, it wasn't like that when I wrote it.
Yeah, he wrote a movie about fascism and racism that got swept away and just kind of turned out weird.
Yeah.
Either way, Tommy Lee Jones gets the white bitch, goes upstairs, and he's just like trying to like bide time because he knows like she's like, well, let's fuck. And he's just like, no, not yet. Like, I got to help my friend kill some people. I got to pay attention to that. And so she just starts stripping him, and he's just like, all right. He doesn't even be like, just hold on, like mm-hmm. I thought he would. Mm-hmm. And there's a great scene where he's clearly like getting a handy or a header from this bitch while putting his shotgun together underneath the bed without her seeing.
Just on the sly, doing a little extra work.
And so finally,
Charles
Rain shows up and gives the old tap, tap, taparoo.
Mm-hmm.
And Tommy Lee Jones gets real fucking hard because mm-hmm. he's like, yeah, time suddenly, to kill.
Suddenly the dick hardens in her hand and like, oh, something happened.
Yeah. And what is he gets up with the shotgun and like puts it together and she's
the
like,
the hooker starts freaking the fuck out. Like, what the fuck is happening?
And what is he says?
And his response is,
what the fuck are you doing?
I'm going to kill a bunch of people.
That's right, yeah. I'm going to go kill a whole bunch of people.
Another great fucking line. And then the rest of the movie is just them killing a whole bunch of people. They fucking blow away all these fucking dudes throughout this whole whorehouse with sawed-off shotguns.
Yeah.
Guts are exploding. Blood's everywhere.
While
naked fucking hookers just run right
out
and left,
room
screeping,
after room. It's just
butt cheeks jiggling,
tits,
boobies
ass,
flopping
pussy,
around.
It's all there. Man, there's no like, oh, that was a really cool kill scene, because that's not what it was about.
No,
it was an orgy of killing.
And just them with just big shit-eating grins on their faces as they're like, they're not like just mowing everybody down. They're taking hits.
Yeah,
like,
they're
this
getting
is an
shot
ending will
too.
For them, but they're still just loving it. Like, this is the first time they've been fucking alive the whole movie.
So, like, he kills Roscoe P. Coltrane pretty quickly, and then he's like, well, time to get the rest of the gang, and they start making their way through.
They don't explicitly show it, but I think the first thing he does is just shotguns off his hand, like full-on shotgunned off his whole hand.
Yes, he's
like,
reaching for the gun. Yeah,
and then he turns around and then he shotguns him in the fucking belly, which explodes everywhere. But I thought that was a nice little bit of poetry, just like, I'm gonna take your fucking hand, asshole.
Yeah, eye for an eye. I like that shit. So finally, it all just works down to he gets their... They're by the stairs. They've both taken some hits. They got to go downstairs because Automatic Slim's behind the bar shooting.
Yeah, and doing shooters.
And they're like, fuck it. Like, get ourselves together. And there's a great scene. They're fucking... they do it twice. The first time is executed perfectly. Charles Rain tosses two shells to Tommy
Just
Lee Jones.
Each other shotgun shells.
Because Jones has the shotgun still. Charles Rain's downgraded to just a side piece at this point, a little six shooter. So he tosses Tommy Lee Jones two shells, which he grabs, catches both of them in air, and then starts loading the shotgun. And then they're finally like, all right, I'm loaded up. Let's fucking do this. So they go downstairs.
Just charge down the stairs.
Looking like fucking my guy Robert Redford again, Sundance.
Oh, Butch and Sundance?
Yeah, Butch and Sundance. They just guns a-blazing.
Yeah, it's kind of a final fucking showdown type deal.
So they're just shooting everything that they can.
Just not
just
everyone,
everything.
But also everything.
Yeah, they're shooting bottles as like a misdirection to like get people on their fucking like heels. Like, finally they shoot everybody down. They both get shot pretty bad. They get back up. Charles Rain executes Automatic Slim. He's clearly dead. And like, he's sitting there and he's like, should I pull the trigger again? I want to pull the trigger again. I'm gonna pull the trigger again. And he does, and it's empty, and he's like, it's over.
And then...
like, it just comes over
right back into that San Antone song.
Well, he walks over...
bringing it back.
He walks over to Tommy Lee Jones, who's just sitting there trying not to die,
mm-hmm.
sitting against the bar, and he reaches down, and he grabs him, and he goes, "Let's go, Johnny."
Uh-huh.
And San Antone plays, and the credits fucking roll.
See, like, it ends with them fucking just walking out.
Yeah.
And I loved it because it's the exact same fucking ending of The Graduate. They did the fucking Graduate ending where fucking old Dustin Hoffman and Elaine are running. They're laughing. They're happy.
Yeah.
This is where they're running down the stairs just shooting.
Yeah.
And then at the end of The Graduate, they get on that bus. They ran away from their parents. Like,
now what do we do?
And then it just ends with that look of uncertainty. And that's how this fucking ends. Just these two, their smiles are gone. What are they going to do next?
Yeah.
Now they've killed all these people. Like, there's no one left to kill. And all they want to do is kill. And it's just like, big old fucking question mark, back into San Antone. And this song, if it sounded a little bit sad the first time it played over the opening credits, so much sadder.
It's even tougher this
second time around. This fucking second time around.
It's again, the song, written perfectly for it, is the false, that false hope of optimism in the beginning of it. And then at the end, it's... you can tell it's not up.
It doesn't take you out on that high like an 80s action movie would. This is a 70s action movie, so there's just a little bit of realism,
he's singing
a little
about
bit of sadness.
Can't wait to go back to San Antone. Why is he saying that? Because everything around him is shit. And he's just hoping that maybe it's as good as he remembers from when he was younger and shit was okay.
Never will be.
And that's the message of the movie, is shit'll never be good again.
Fucking take that one to bed with you tonight, folks. Yeah.
Shit'll never be good again.
All right, we're going to take a brief break here and have a coming attraction for what we're talking about next week. And then after that, last fucking thoughts about Rolling Thunder as it enters Judgment Day.
Get ready for the battle of the century. In this corner, experience, determination, and guts. And in this corner...
get in! We're gonna nail those turkeys!
His mommy.
Go ahead. Make your bed.
Tom!
Oh, please, you don't have anything you haven't seen before.
Please make her stop!
Is he adorable?
Sylvester Stallone. Mm-hmm. Estelle Getty. Stop!
Or my mom will shoot!
Welcome back.
Welcome back. Welcome back.
Welcome back to the States, Major Charles Rain.
Oh, man. Can you imagine, like, A, having to come back to your boring life after war, but then B, also, it's the 70s? What a terrible time.
Yeah, but, like, you're coming back and, like...
I think of the 70s, I just think the opening credits of MASH. Just, like, everything in the world is too brown.
Oh,
there's
God.
Too much brown everywhere.
Wasn't that, That wasn't the... That was the Korean War. Though,
oh, no,
it?
Yeah. There's... Yeah. MASH has nothing to do with the 70s. Wasn't made in the 70s. Wasn't set in the 70s.
No.
But just...
Yeah.
When I think about that brown opening credits of MASH...
Do-do-do-do.
And the depressing Suicide Do-do-do-do. Is Painless... I'm just like... That's just the feel of the 70s to me. That or the opening of fucking Taxi. They just make me think about, like, wood-paneled fucking basements. And everybody wearing corduroys.
You know I love the theme song of Taxi.
Oh, man. That's a real wrist slitter right there.
Like, both of those songs, like, I don't know, man. Like, I'll just listen to them. I'll just listen to them and get my head right.
Weird, super fucking weird way to live your life.
Like,
one step away from having your own fucking, like, torture shed.
Yeah, I feel like I might end up there someday. Maybe I'll start, now that I'm out of the prison job,
mm-hmm.
and I'm a... greasy salesman.
You're going to need something to fill that void in your hole.
I was going
to
say.
The prison's going to leave.
I'll probably start having some prison flashbacks,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, make yourself a little jail cell like downstairs or something.
Yeah.
I mean, just tuck yourself away in everyone's.
You
want to
be my, you're going to be my Johnny?
Oh, I hated jail the one time I was there. I don't ever want to jail cosplay with you.
So, you're going to be the Johnny to my Charles Rain.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's fine.
Whenever I lose it, that'll be good. The thing I love about MASH... they got
it's
one of the most
I haven't heard anyone ever say
depressing songs ever in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Suicide is Painless, but it's got the words.
Yeah, they're like, how can we make this more depressing now that we're going to spin this off into a series?
Yeah, what do we do? Just, I don't know, make it like the theme song from Taxi.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm going to have the energy to fucking finish this thing now.
It's energizing me. Like, I feel good.
All right, let's get into Judgment Day while you're on a fucking high. We take a look at the film. We see
Wild Turkey.
What other people thought about the movie, and then we give our final judgment. As we do, I'm going to start it off here with a couple of negative reviews I found out there in the wild, just to get a perspective of the people who didn't think this was
show me
great.
An asshole that didn't like it.
Our first
did you find, sorry to cut you off here.
Oh, Jesus.
Did you find the 1970 whatever New Yorker?
No.
Article about this movie?
I don't look at real published responses to this thing. I'm only looking at fucking what internet mutants think.
Yeah, it was their headline was Rolling Thunder, Few Claps.
Well, the guy only has one hand. Cut him some slack. This first 1.5 bullet review is from IMDb user John A.
John A.
He says, there is such a love for this film, and I never saw why, Maybe it's the final violent climactic scene. This film neither rolls or thunders. That's really good. Wish I'd come up with that. The film is just too slow and boring me all the way through. The highlight, however, is the acting talents of William Devane and Tommy Lee Jones. True. Can't argue there.
True.
But apart from that, it's not very good and one I would not recommend. 1.5 bullets.
Dickhead.
So, I don't know. There were some negative ones out there. I put that one in there because a lot of people said it was too slow. But I got another one that goes...
People don't fucking appreciate the slow burner anymore.
People just can't sit through that shit anymore. Get off your Twitter.
It's not too slow. It's a 90 fucking minute movie.
And it's just fucking soaked in tension all the way through.
Yeah.
If you pay the fuck attention.
People are fucking losers.
This guy, he's got some more things about it, though. This is Eric Nyberg 06 from Rotten Tomatoes, a two-bullet review. A little bit lengthy. He really gets into
Two's
it.
All right.
Besides being listed by Tarantino as one of his favorites, I didn't know a lot about this movie before seeing it. Heck, I didn't even know Tommy Lee Jones had a role in it. But I'm glad he did, because it was actually one of the movie's few delights.
Yeah,
you see, the 95 minutes spent watching this movie were some pretty wasted ones. Despite that harsh verdict, I don't think this movie's a terrible one. It's just irrelevant. Everything in it has been done so much better in similarly themed movies both since and before. Rambo did the action far better. The sleazy grindhouse movies did the gore better, or at least they had some more of it. First-class films like Taxi Driver and Deer Hunter did the drama and story about the misfit non-veteran way better. Actually, these first-class films also did the action better. And Rambo did the drama better than Rolling Thunder as well. I mean, I can't really argue with somebody talking about how great Rambo is, but he's still pissing me off a little bit, you know what I'm saying? Not to mention, all these movies were a lot better entertainment and interesting pieces of cinema history. This film doesn't deliver anything unique besides mishmashing shootouts, gore, and story into a single unremarkable and forgettable movie. This could all be forgiven if it had the charm of a zero-budget exploitation film, but it doesn't even come close, being a far too professionally made film to ever be so bad it's good. It's just so bad it's boring. Two bullets.
This guy's an idiot.
I got one more.
A lot of people climb on the Quentin Tarantino thing just because he likes stuff. Like, I like a lot of shitty things.
Yeah.
You shouldn't tell me I'm a genius because I like it.
Tarantino definitely likes a lot of shitty fucking things. Yeah.
But on the same note, he runs like a series of B-movies at a New York theater.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a weekly thing he does.
Oh, he fucking owns the theater out in L.A. Which one is it where... They program fucking everything. Most of it comes from...
Is it
that
one, or is it New... Well, either way.
The New Beverly out in L.A. he owns now, and they do double features every day. A lot of the shit comes from his personal collection, or they get prints from archivists or the studios and whatnot.
He showed the karate blaxploitation film that Maria's grandfather stars in.
Oh, wow. That's real.
Spook Who Sat real by exciting. The Front Door.
That's a great title, too. Yeah. Why haven't I seen this movie?
Well, you know, we can watch it.
We got one more one-bullet review. This is one of the only one-bullet reviews I found. This one is from Amazon user Henry P. Sasser Jr. He says...
Don Visor?
Best adventure drama I ever saw. One bullet.
Wait, what?
I don't think Henry understood how the reviews work on Amazon.
Was that was that Charles Rain's dumb kid that wrote the review?
I just pictured a real confused old man. Other side of the coin, there are a lot of people who loved it. A lot of five-bullet reviews that I waded through.
Give me some excerpts.
I pulled a couple of them out. This one's from Rotten Tomatoes user Draw24.
Draw.
I like the first review of this movie as posted, and I have seen it several times over the years. There is a point which seems to have eluded all the reviewers I have ever read. This movie is a Western! This was the first Western movie made after the disappearance of the genre for many years.
That's fair.
The car was the horse. The girlfriend typically was left behind. The revenge theme for the raid and the deaths of his family, the returning veteran from Nam instead of the Civil War, the border locale, the dying buddy trooper, even the name John Rain being close to John Wayne all scream, "I am a Western movie."
Well, right, it's Charles Rain,
you fucking
John
idiot.
John was his friend.
But not one print reviewer whom I have ever read picked up on it. Not one. Five bullets.
That's a really good point.
I mean, there's a lot of Western shit going on here. It's got a couple little things wrong and was kind of a dickhead, but, you know, good point. Next five bullet review from Amazon user Uncle Billy. You heard me right.
There's too much there.
Being a former Green Beret 1967 and 1970, I enjoyed this movie. Starring William Devane and a young Tommy Lee Jones. What a great story of a just cause. Plenty of action and very accurate portrayal of weapons and the destructive power of a pump shotgun. ... Uncle Billy. I guess he just signs all his reviews.
I'm done.
Five bullets from Uncle Billy.
I'm not doing it. I'm gonna finish the show you want. I'm done.
All right, Matt's going to take a break here. I've got one more five bullet review. This one from Amazon user Frugal3. I feel like all has been said, but this one was a little bit too good for me to leave out. What's in your safe? Whorehouse shootout, Taxi Driver redux. Linda Haynes left acting to become a legal secretary. The deputy adulterer getting his due is a rabbit trail. Doing the Randy Weaver out in the workshop. Tommy Lee Jones looks like he just got home from the prom. This film is right out of Kurt Saxon's Survivor. Five bullets from Frugal 3. Doing a little fucking Dada poetry. This is fucking film review. That's just to give you a little breather here.
That one just...
Doing the Randy Weaver out in the workshop.
Like, Uncle Billy's my new best friend.
Yeah, Uncle Billy's another one of these guys who we're going to need to look up and just start reading all of his reviews.
Also, my new show mission is to get Uncle Billy on our show.
Special guest Uncle Billy.
At some point, or at least be like, give us a suggestion, like, what should we watch, just like, Uncle Billy?
Give us some fucking stories about being a Green Beret in 1967 to 1970.
I'd love to do like maybe like fucking Rambo, the first one, Rambo First Blood, and pick fucking Uncle Billy's brain on that one, because that's about the Green Berets, man. That's
a great,
you know,
fucking idea right here.
I want to know if he's seen things that would make a Billy goat puke. Or seen Rambo eat things.
I know you've seen things. Puke. You've seen the movie Rolling Thunder. So let's get into your final thoughts and your rating, Matthew.
I'm going back and forth on this one, and I want to say I'm going with the higher of the two that I'm going with here.
Being generous.
I enjoyed this film.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lost art, the fucking 90-minute action film.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this is a perfect execution of it.
95 and minutes here, but I wasn't mad at those extra 5 minutes.
No.
You earned them.
No, yeah, you can do 95. It's fine. It's not necessarily like an action movie all the way. It's tense. It's gripping. It's a thriller. It's a fucking noir slow burner, Western slow burner, like that guy points out. It does it great. It's got the fucking song, you know? The
song bumps it up a little bit in my
book. Used twice in perfect, like, they don't do the fucking, like, we paid a lot of money for this song, so we're gonna keep shoehorning it in.
No.
They bookend it, man. Like, here's how it opens, here's how it closes.
And you've gone through some shit, so you've have an interesting, different reaction to the song
and
the
then,
two
like,
times you hear it.
The only other music that's really in it is just fitting mariachi music when they're down south. It all serves a purpose. Everything's great. I'm giving it four bullets,
four
man.
Fucking bullets, solid four bullets.
I enjoyed the shit out of this one.
Okay. I feel like this movie's got a great lead performance by William Devane, who I feel like should have gotten more work as a lead actor. He did just ice cold, great, a lot of minimalist shit, but whenever he did any tiny little thing, it meant something and you knew it.
Yeah.
There's not a ton of action in this movie, but it builds to its action and what's there is meaningful, so I love that. No bras on anyone throughout the whole movie, which I fucking love. The hook is a great fucking gimmick. I love his hook.
Yeah.
It's just to give this sort of an exploitation twinge to it.
It's a character. It gives it a character.
Yeah, you get some drama and you get a little exploitation. movie accomplishes a lot. I really liked it in general. If I could throw any sort of criticism at it, I'm going to say the acting and sort of just the simple story drive it. Not a lot's being done as far as directing goes. Just serviceable, sort of out-of-the-way directing. I feel like somebody with like some style, some panache, could have really milked more tension out of this. Like you get some sort
That's fair. Sort of a
score in here a little bit, ramping things up. You do some flashy things with the editing or the camera. You could have bumped this up a notch, and it could have been like just a perfect fucking movie that everybody still talks about and always gets fucking shown. But that's picking nits here. I'm also giving it 4 bullets.
Bam.
4 fucking solid bullets.
We're finally on the same page.
We're on the same page here when it comes to Rolling Thunder, 1977.
There's a good chance
Billy Devane.
You never heard of it, and you should.
Oh,
and
yeah. If you've gone through all this and still haven't watched the fucking thing,
yeah.
First off, you should be watching the movies first. It makes this a much more enjoyable experience. Second off, get out there and fucking Shout Factory's got a Blu-ray of it.
Shout Factory, right?
Pick it up.
I think it's streaming on some other thing like Vudu, if anybody knows what the fuck that is.
Oh, that's the Walmart-owned fucking streaming platform.
Oh, so all you guys that got
iTunes.
All you guys with the Garth Brooks albums, you know, go ahead.
You could probably Vudu Garth Brooks concert films, too.
You probably already saw it because you were trying to find Thunder Rolls on Vudu.
One of the cool
things you got Rolling Thunder instead.
Vudu does is you can take all your DVDs into Walmart and for like $1 a piece or something,
yeah,
they'll fucking like digitize it and give you access to it on Vudu. So like,
that's not a
you
bad
can buy,
business
yeah, like
model.
Empty out your whole fucking, my whole fucking closet full of shit and get that all on Vudu, theoretically. It's not something I've ever gone through the fucking process of doing, but I've thought about it.
Vudu, I'm going to give you a little bit of credit. You might be onto something here.
I've also thought about our upcoming schedule for movies we're watching, Matt.
Okay, as long as the man doesn't cancel us.
The rest of this week, or the rest of this month, we got some celebrations coming up. I'll just throw that out there. Some important milestones.
Wow, okay.
A lot of big celebrations starting next week, so
planning
get ready for it.
You're planning a special birthday episode for me. That's very nice.
That's
Thank
not
you.
It. It's your birthday is on Mother's Day, right? You're sharing the day. We got to give it to the moms. I'm sorry you're disappointed. This is, you know what's going to cheer you up?
Once every couple of years it happens.
Do the sign off. You love doing the sign off. That'll cheer you up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Give it a whirl.
Do I? Stay single.
It's a long road when you're on your own, and it hurts when they tear your dreams apart. And every new town just seems to bring you down. Trying to find peace of mind can break your heart. It's a use a friend.